Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Today, Joe Biden became the 46th president of the United States. He has been in public life for the better part of a half century. So the broad strokes of Biden's biography are well known. The tragic death of his first wife and daughter, all those Amtrak rides, decades in the Senate, 2 terms as vice president. But what isn't often enough explored? The very thing that Biden himself says defines who he is.
My religion defines who I am. And I've been a practicing Catholic my whole life.
My religion is just an enormous sense of solace. And some of it relates to ritual. Some of it relates to just comfort of what you've done your whole life. I go to Mass and I'm able to be, it's just alone. Even in the crowd, you're alone.
Biden is only the second president who's a practicing Catholic. John F. Kennedy was the first, elected 60 years ago. Kennedy was often forced into a defensive crouch about his faith. No such hesitation today. In his inaugural address, President Biden wove together lessons he takes from Catholicism into the secular fabric of American democracy.
Many centuries ago, St. Augustine, a saint of my church, wrote that a people was a multitude defined by the common objects of their love. What are the common objects we as Americans love that define us as Americans? I think we know. Opportunity, security, liberty, dignity, respect, honor, and yes, the truth.
Now Biden is president for all Americans, Catholics, people of any faith, and Americans who subscribe to no religious belief at all. So how will Biden's Catholicism inform his presidency? Should it imbue his leadership at all? Well, joining me now to talk about it is Massimo Fagioli. He's a professor of historical theology at Villanova University and author of the new book, Joe Biden and Catholicism in the United States. Massimo Fagioli, welcome to On Point.
Hello, thank you.
Also with us today, Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst. Jack, welcome.
Hello, Meghna. Hello to our guest.
I actually first want to begin with what happened last night when Joe Biden and Kamala Harris held a very somber ceremony, a memorial, in a sense, before the Lincoln Memorial Reflecting Pool in Washington, D.C., to remember the 400,000 Americans who died in the COVID pandemic. I mean, here we are today on January 20th, and it's been exactly 1 year since the first patient was hospitalized in the United States with what we soon found out was COVID. So here is a moment from what Biden said last night.
To heal, we must remember. It's hard sometimes to remember, but that's how we heal. It's important to do that as a nation. That's why we're here today. Between sundown and dusk, let us shine the lights in the darkness along the sacred pool of reflection. Remember all whom we lost.
Jack, it occurred to me that in one of Biden's first acts as he approaches the presidency is essentially the first national memorial we've had for this pandemic. He held a national wake almost.
He did. He's the designated mourner for America. You know, he's fond of quoting Seamus Heaney, the Irish poet, quoted him the line about hope and history rhyming in his speech at the Democratic Convention. There's a short lyric of Seamus Heaney that applies to all of us to this moment. It's from a poem called The Long-Tailed Pull of Grief. The poet is flying a kite with his two boys. Before the kite plunges down into the wood, and this line goes useless, take in your hands, boys, and feel the strumming, rooted, long-tailed pull of grief. You were born fit for it. Stand here in front of me and take the strain. We've gone in a blink from the reality television president to the reality president, the president who stands for the, you know, the cruel hard news of life, that love ends in loss. That's the strain we all take. That's part of the bargain of life. And every time we look at him, we think of that. And it's part of who he is, and he's beginning to a nation besotted with Trumpian fantasies. He's gone right to the the grim truth that none of us, we all, the billion-dollar entertainment industry exists to make us forget. But that's, you know, the terrible truth: to love is to lose. And I think that was an emblematic moment, not just for him, but for the whole country, and certainly for the families who've lost loved ones. Mm.
Well, Professor Fagioli, I wonder if you saw elements or notes of Biden's Catholicism, even in how he approached that memorial service last night.
Absolutely. So here, I totally agree that in the passage from a reality TV president to a reality president. So there's also a Catholic theological and religious aspect, because Joe Biden's Catholicism, as we saw yesterday at that wake, is not intellectual, is not made of abstract propositions, but it's made of a very concrete grasp on reality, which in Catholic theological terms is called incarnational. So you experience your faith in real life, in all its joys and sorrows. And so that was really saying something to what kind of Catholic culture he embodies, which is very different from sexy versions of Catholicism that are about forms and are about slogans and are about ideologies. It's very, very practical, but again, it's not simplistic. It reveals a deep grasp of what the Catholic faith is about and has to say about real life.
Hmm. Well, I will stress that Biden is... He approaches the presidency in a nation that is secular, right? He's president for all Americans, regardless of their faith or religious beliefs or non-beliefs. And that is something that has been true for every person who's occupied the White House. And at the same time, we've had people of very profound religious belief, evangelical Christian, Methodist, etc. And so I wonder, how much do you think, or how much can you gauge so far, Professor Fagioli, that does Biden's Catholicism actually inform what we've seen over the past 50 years in terms of his political practice?
I think his Catholicism informs his whole life and his politics, because you're right, this nation has become more secular. But here, Joe Biden's Catholicism can engage the new face of this nation, which is more diverse and more secular and more multi-religious, because his understanding and his practice of Catholicism is of a big tent. It's not confessional. It's not about proselytism. And so this is really one of the geniuses of Catholicism, which is not about fitting in one precise, particular version of the faith from a cultural point of view, social point of view, but it's about what can be found as Catholic in new situations, socially, culturally, politically, historically. And so, as we know, Joe Biden, his positions on many issues have evolved, have adapted, but that has been done, I think, with a Catholic spirit of trying to understand what is in common between one particular religious faith and the history of a country, the history of one people.
Well, Jack, we've got a minute to go before the first break here. I might see it a little differently, that perhaps Biden's fluidity on certain issues, I mean, abortion being the one that, of course, immediately pops to mind, exists in spite of the Catholic Church.
Oh, that's good. Yes, I think that's probably true. He did shift his position on publicly funded abortions just, I think, a year and a half ago, the so-called Hyde Amendment that prevented people on Medicaid from getting abortions. And that was done. He had a rationale for it, having to do with his view of expanding health care. But clearly, it was an effort to get right with the Democratic Party that is, unequivocally pro-choice. So that was a shift that was indeed in spite of his faith.
Mm. Well, we are exploring this hour Joe Biden's faith, his Catholicism, and also Catholicism in America more broadly today, and how the two might live a little uneasily with each other. I'm joined by Massimo Fagioli and Jack Beatty, and we're going to head into this break listening to Yolanda Adams singing Hallelujah last night at the COVID memorial in front of the Lincoln Memorial Reflecting Pool. This is On Point.
It's not someone who's seen the light. It's a cold and it's a broken hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken? A podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're exploring how Joe Biden's faith, his Catholicism, informs his leadership now as he approaches the presidency and the White House. I'm joined today by Massimo Fagioli. He's professor of historical theology at Villanova University and author of Joe Biden and Catholicism in the United States. Jack Beatty also joins us as well. He's On Point's news analyst. And let's listen to what some On Point listeners said about Catholicism and Joe Biden. Here's Amy from Dayton, Ohio.
Catholicism will come in with the social justice issues that he has already taken up when he was in elected office all along his life. And I expect that to continue. And I think, how can it not affect his presidency? I mean, it's just part of who he is.
And here's Michael from Portland, Connecticut.
Religion is important, but what a lot of people don't understand is when you're the president of the United States, you serve all the people. And because you may have certain beliefs, that doesn't mean that you can impose those beliefs on non-believers.
So this question of belief and how it meets policy, Biden faced questions about that quite often on the campaign trail, and in fact, through his political career. For example, here he is in 2012 during a vice presidential debate discussing how he reconciles his faith, his Catholicism, with his stance on abortion.
With regard to abortion, I accept my church's position on abortion as a what we call de fide doctrine. Life begins at conception. That's the church's judgment. I accept it in my personal life. But I refuse to impose it on equally devout Christians and Muslims and Jews. And I just refuse to impose that on others.
So Massimo Fagioli, talk to me a little bit about just sticking with the issue of abortion. How do you see Biden trying to navigate that as a political leader?
It's the most complicated issue for him and for any Catholic in public life anywhere, especially in the United States. There's no question about that. So here Biden has adopted a position that's typical of, I would say, 20th century Catholicism, of a distinction between what is your personal faith and you as a Catholic politician have to accept, and what you as a Catholic politician at the service of the whole nation, you can impose or legislate. And so this is really typical of, I would say, an old style Catholicism, which is typical of the Catholic Church of the Second Vatican Council, Vatican II, after the 60s. And it's clearly something that in these last few years have become very unpopular with the new generation of conservative Catholics that have made a movement of the rejection, not just of the pro-choice platform only, but of the whole concept of a distinction between your personal life as a Catholic and what you as a Catholic politician in public life can do. And so here Joe Biden, in some sense, is a survivor of the 20th century Catholicism that we're really trying to articulate something that's very important for a church in a multicultural, multi-religious country like the United States.
Now, this is, I think, a vitally important point to explore in depth. Many years ago, I did a series of reports on the 200th anniversary of the Boston Archdiocese here, as we're based in Boston. And at that time, I actually went to several services. I went to a mass that was done in the traditional Latin form. It was unchanged from, post-Vatican II. Different forms of mass, and I met many absolutely devout Catholics who told me they didn't really recognize a lot of what the Vatican had done since the mid 60s. I mean, so that divide really is there, and so let's talk a little bit more about that, the difference between Professor Fagioli, as you call it, 20th century American Catholicism and some very politically potent versions of 21st century American Catholicism. And in order to do that, I just want to play a moment from America's last Catholic president. That, of course, would be John F. Kennedy. And on September 12, 1960, then-candidate Kennedy gave a speech to the Greater Houston Ministerial Association about his Catholicism. And at the time, there was a great deal of concern that Kennedy, if elected, might not act independently of the Vatican. And so he began his speech saying there were far more important issues to be discussing other than his religion. At the time, he pointed to communism, hunger, the cost of medical care, poverty, and education. And then he said this.
These are the real issues which should decide this campaign. And they are not religious issues. For war and hunger and ignorance and despair, no religious barrier. But because I am a Catholic, and no Catholic has ever been elected president, the real issues in this campaign have been obscured, perhaps deliberately, in some quarters less responsible than this. So it is apparently necessary for me to state once again, not what kind of church I believe in, for that should be important only to me, but what kind of America I believe in.
John F. Kennedy in September of 1960. Jack, do you want to just, I'd love to hear from you a little bit more about how much Kennedy had to be oftentimes rather defensive about his Catholicism, even though, as Professor Fagioli points out, in the 20th century, perhaps Catholicism was less overtly political than certain strains of it are now.
Yes, well, he was fighting something rooted in 20th century, earlier 20th century political history. That is the Al Smith campaign of 1928. Al Smith was a Catholic running for the first Catholic who ran for the presidency. And the Republicans in rural areas circulated a photograph of the mouth of the Holland Tunnel, which had just recently been completed in New York. There was the mouth of the Holland Tunnel, and the caption underneath said, "Al Smith's secret tunnel to the Vatican." That was the fear that this Roman Catholic Church, a supranational organization, centralized with a dogma and rules and so on set down over 1,500 years, that this was a danger to American freedom because the conscience of a Catholic wasn't free. It wasn't autonomous. He was under the thumb, he or she, of the Pope. And that's what Kennedy was running into. And after the election, he discovered that Martin Luther King's father, Daddy King, who was a preacher himself, had voted for Nixon. He said, "Who would have thought this guy was a bigot?" But, you know, many people were warranted in fearing that this supranational organization with a claim on the conscience of a candidate could determine what he did.
Mm. Professor Fagioli, you wanted to comment on that?
Sure. I mean, I totally agree, but it was even more than a suspicion or a ghost, because there was in 1960 an ongoing campaign that was orchestrated by Norman Peel and some major evangelical leaders in this country that really orchestrated an anti-Catholic campaign against John Kennedy on the basis of his Catholicism. And so here we know that in the Democratic Party, in 1956, still, there was a position against the idea of a Catholic running for president. So here, John Kennedy being elected, despite being a Catholic, was no small accomplishment. It was really defying still, in 1960, a lot of prejudice, also because that was the church of the pre-Vatican II, where the idea of the freedom of conscience was really not part of Catholic teaching, honestly.
Mm. Well, so Kennedy was forced to be defensive of his faith, and as we heard in that clip, really step away from issues of Catholicism or his Catholicism in terms of how he would approach the presidency. 60 years later, Biden does not have to be defensive about his faith. But at the same time, he has had to answer questions on many social issues. We talked about abortion, contraception, same-sex marriage. None of these issues, as far as I can recall, kinds of social issues were things that Kennedy had to deal with, a half century and a decade ago. So how much does that tell you about how, continuing on this line of exploration, Professor Fagioli, but how much American Catholicism has changed?
It has changed enormously because back then, in 1960, Kennedy's Catholicism was a problem for many Protestants and many secular people in this country, but not for his fellow Catholics. Even those were not very happy with the idea of having him at the White House. Joe Biden's Catholicism is not a problem for most Protestants or more secular people in this country. It's a problem for a number of fellow Catholics in this country, exactly for the issues that you have mentioned, because in 1960, Joe Kennedy never had to answer questions on abortion, on same-sex marriage, on LGBTQ issues. And so this is really an incredibly changed landscape, also from the institutional point of view, because we know that a few bishops in 1960 were not happy with John Kennedy as a candidate. But when he was elected, they rallied behind him in this moment of pride, which is something that you really cannot say for what happened to Joe Biden in these last few months.
So hold that thought for a second, because I want to come back to it. It's very, very important. But I just have to ask. In fact, the question I'm about to ask deserves its own hour or two of discussion, granted. But Professor Fagioli, what drove that change that you're describing about in American Catholicism from the 1960s to today that put more of these social issues at the center of that Venn diagram between American Catholicism and how they view politics?
Well, many things happened, but I think especially one. In 1960, the Catholic Church and Catholics were still perceived a little bit as an outsider and as a minority still, especially in politics. In these last 60 years, they have become the single largest church in this country. You now have many Catholics in politics, the Speaker of the House, five justices on the Supreme Court. But at the same time, Catholicism has become much more polarized. To be very blunt, I mean, Catholic progressivism in the United States is much more progressive than in any other country. And Catholic conservatism in this country is much more conservative than in any other country. And so you have really a split church where the middle ground is difficult to find, and it's much easier to talk to the more progressive, most progressive or more conservative wings. And this is why any Catholic in public life has to find this desperately difficult to find middle ground, so while keeping in balance different identities.
Well, Jack, it's so fascinating because I'm looking at some numbers here from the Associated Press. The Catholic vote was pretty much split 50-50, almost exactly 50-50 between Biden and Trump in November.
Yes. You know, the controversies that separate Catholics from, if you would, mainstream opinion all have to do with these pelvic sins, you might say. But once you move away from the pelvis, you find that Catholic social teaching is, in fact, majoritarian. I mean, it stresses commitment to the poor. It stresses, in fact, the Catholic Church, it may be the single most institution that is most critical of capitalism in the world. In the 80s, there was a bishop's letter that basically said, capitalism is not morally sanctioned. It can only be accepted, and that's because it creates inequality, and inequality is an insult to human dignity. Therefore, the only way capitalism can be justified morally is with social programs that seek to mitigate the inequalities capitalism creates. And that's Joe Biden. That's his position. He spoke of it in the convention, how, you know, the great inequalities of wealth in America are outrageous and need to be addressed. He wants to tax the rich more, and let's hope he wants to tax back some of the $1 trillion last year, made by the 659 U.S. billionaires. They made $1 trillion more just by in the stock market, and that's nearly double the wealth of the bottom 50% of Americans, 659 people. Biden wants to go after that. That's majoritarian. That's Catholic social teaching. And that's where Catholicism and the Democratic Party have long been on happy terms.
Mm. Well, let's listen to a moment to Ashley McGuire, who's a senior fellow at the Catholic Association, a group that advocates Catholic teaching in the public sphere. And she told us regarding that divide that she said she believes Biden does not stand for all Catholic teachings.
I think in many respects, while Joe Biden wants to have it both ways, he wants to, he very openly and sort of aggressively campaigned on his Catholic faith, but then also wants to distance himself or really disown certain Catholic teachings. And, you know, I think this is where it becomes an issue for him with some Catholic voters. The issues that he very much goes out of his way to distance himself from or disown or say he has private views that will differ from where he's going to make policy are the issues that are actually considered the immutable, fundamental core teachings of the Catholic Church.
Professor Fagioli, we have about 30 seconds before we have to take our next break, but did you want to respond to what McGuire's saying there?
Sure. I understand the anger of those Catholics who would like to impose those teachings in public life, but there's a distinction missing here because Joe Biden has never questioned the Catholic teaching on abortion or on anything else. It's a matter of a distinction between what you as a Catholic can respect in your life and have to respect and what you can legislate on a whole country.
Well, apparently 50% of Catholics may not in the United States might not believe that or subscribe to that. So we'll explore more of that when we come back. We're talking about Joe Biden's Catholicism with Massimo Fagioli and Jack Beattie. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Shinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about Joe Biden's Catholicism. I'm joined by Massimo Fagioli. He's a professor of historical theology at Villanova University and author of Joe Biden and Catholicism in the United States. Jack Beattie joins us as well. He's On Point news analyst. Let's listen to a little bit more of Biden himself. This is last June during George Floyd's funeral. Then candidate Biden offered a video eulogy saying it was his Catholic upbringing that taught him the value of social justice.
I grew up with Catholic social doctrine, which taught me that faith without works is dead. And you'll know us by what we do. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got to deal with the denial of the promise of this nation to so many people for so long. It's about who we are, what we believe, and maybe most importantly, who we want to be to ensure that all men and women are not only created equal, but are treated equally.
Joe Biden last June in a video eulogy during George Floyd's funeral. We got a lot of calls from On Point listeners talking about how Biden talked about his faith on the campaign trail. Here's Evan from West Newton, Massachusetts.
I find the president-elect's faith really refreshing after a president who didn't seem to believe in much of anything rather than his own or beyond his own reelection. And I understand how people could be concerned about, you know, Biden's faith influencing his politics. And I mean, certainly I wouldn't want him to, enforce any specific, you know, Catholic doctrines or dogmas. And I can say that even as a person of faith myself. I don't think that that's what he wants to do. I think that he strongly believes in some human dignity, some innate goodness that comes from a power beyond us.
That's Evan from West Newton, Massachusetts. Adam called us from Reidsville, North Carolina, wanting to remind everyone that the United States is still a nation that has a separation between church and state.
As a secular person, as a non-theist, as an atheist, I feel like we should hold Joe Biden and, frankly, other politicians accountable for their beliefs and try our best to keep our law and our morality as secular as possible. Now, I believe and I trust Joe Biden to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, not because he's a Catholic or anything like that. I trust him to do the right things because they're the right things to do.
Massimo Fagioli, I wanted to hear more from you about American Catholicism now, because you had said earlier that what's new in terms of America's second Catholic president is the fact that half of Catholics out there may not even believe that Joe Biden is Catholic enough. That judgment doesn't just land on Biden. Do they not have a similarly dubious view of even the direction that the Vatican has headed under Francis?
Oh, certainly. I mean, one of the most interesting phenomena to watch in these last few years is that if you look at the Catholic voices in opposition to Joe Biden or saying that he's not Catholic enough are pretty much the same Catholic voices that have accused Pope Francis of the same charge. So included some Catholic intellectuals and included some bishops. And so here there is an overlap between a very conservative and I would say very Republican U.S. Catholicism in its opposition between this Jesuit Pope, who has been accused of not being Catholic enough, basically since he started talking often about the poor and the marginalized and LGBT people also, and Joe Biden. And so this is not just a coincidence, but it says something on how much politics has invaded Catholicism, even in the pews, even when Catholics go to Mass. And so this is very divided, not only at the moment to vote, but also on Sunday morning. And so here, Joe Biden's election says something not just on what's happening in the United States, in the U.S. Catholic Church, but also in what's happening between the U.S. and this new non-European Latin American Pope.
You know, you said how much politics has invaded Catholicism. I imagine that many of those same Catholics would say, actually, what we see is how successfully conservative Catholicism has been infused into American politics. I mean, just look at the Supreme Court right now, right? We have, what, six justices who are practicing Catholics of different varieties, right? There's the Amy Coney Barrett version of charismatic Catholicism. Then we also have, perhaps on the other end, Justice Sonia Sotomayor. I can't say that I know in great detail the kind of Catholicism that Chief Justice John Roberts or Justices Alito, Thomas, and Kavanaugh practice, but six out of nine on the Supreme Court. What do you make of that, Professor Fagioli?
Well, it's a large majority of Catholics, but what's more striking is that there's no Protestant on the Supreme Court right now, so which is a stunning reversal if one considers the origins of this country. So this is absolutely right. And so that's why we should keep in mind that it's true that in this country, constitutionally, there is a separation between church and state, but what has never been part of this country is a separation between religion and politics. This is, it's a distinction that we should make. And so here it's absolutely right that Catholic conservatives in this country in these last couple of decades especially have been very effective in creating a conservative movement, especially in law schools, the conservative legal movement. And so this is going to be part of the future of this country and of this church. And so this is why the election of a Catholic like Biden is very important. It may be a signal of something, but Catholic liberals shouldn't fool themselves in thinking that the opposition or that kind of Catholic culture is going to go away. That's absolutely important to keep in mind.
Jack, your thoughts on that?
I take the professor as knowledgeable about this, and it strikes me as right in the data you were giving, you know, practically a 50-50 split in the Catholic vote. Of course, we don't know how much that was influenced by specifically Catholic issues about abortion and homosexuality and how much it was other issues that that motivated that vote. But what I'm struck with is the difference between, and this I think suggests an evolution in the Catholic Church, a softening of the line. The last Catholic to run for president, John Kerry, ran into boycotts of communion. You know, he was refused communion because, after all, he was for abortion rights. Maybe I missed it, but I haven't heard that from the Church this year, Professor.
No, well, actually, that hasn't happened to the same extent during the campaign. We had a few isolated voices, but that did come up a few days after the election because the U.S. bishops had their fall meeting, and a special committee was created to deal with this Catholic president whose positions are different from the Catholic teaching. And so this is something that they have never done for Donald Trump, by the way. And so it's important to remember that the only bishop who has jurisdiction on Joe Biden's liturgies is the Archbishop of Washington, D.C. It's not the USCCB, but these voices have come up lately, actually.
So, Professor Fagioli, you mentioned the U.S. bishops. I wonder if Biden has done something that's very politically canny in constantly referring to his faith in personal terms, right, in terms of what it brings to him, not so much to his politics, because look, we can't have a conversation about the Catholic Church or Catholicism in America without also acknowledging that there are many, many American Catholics who cannot look at the U.S. bishops with trust, given right the sexual abuse scandal that has riven the church. And so by Biden sort of separating himself and just talking about faith in personal terms and not confronting the bishops, was that a sort of a canny thing to do, you think?
Absolutely. This has been much smarter, I would say, than what John Kerry tried to do 16 years ago when he tried to make his Catholic faith private. And so here Joe Biden never made his Catholic faith private, but at the same time, he never replied to those bishops or to the SCCB, which is exactly what he had to do, because we know that the U.S. bishops have suffered a dramatic loss of trust and authority, also because of the sex abuse crisis. So, I mean, so far, he's handling of this issue has been very, very wise and very effective. But there will be other obstacles, I believe, in the next future.
Mm. Well, we spoke with Anthea Butler, Associate Professor of Religion and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania. She served as part of a Catholic Advisory Committee for Biden and also served as co-chair of the campaign's Catholics for Biden outreach group. And she told us that she thinks Biden can help American Catholics relearn what she says Catholicism is really about.
I think Biden is also a beginning for Catholics to think about social justice and to get back into Catholic social teaching about what the church does about the poor, about, you know, grief, about death and dying, about all of those things. This is what I think makes him a very unique person for this particular time period, because he's going to be able to deal with the, you know, the poverty that has happened because of COVID-19, the rise in deaths, he is a man who is acquainted with grief, you know, as Jesus is described. He knows what it is to grieve. He will be able to shepherd the country through that. I think, unfortunately, that many of our bishops and some of our priests, because they have been so hardcore about these different theological issues, that they've forgotten how to minister to the people.
That's Anthea Butler, professor of religion and Africana studies at the University of Pennsylvania. Professor Fagioli, do you have the same kind of optimism that Professor Butler there is professing? I think there's been this long-standing tension or even battle between more conservative and liberal strains of Catholicism, and I'm not sure I see that shifting really meaningfully right now.
Well, if there's a shift, it really still has to come. I think the Catholic Church in the U.S. at the institutional level still has to understand what happened in these last 4 years under Donald Trump, which is seen by many Catholics, and not only in this country, but globally, as a moral failure to see what was happening. And so there's a long road ahead. And surely, I mean, having a Catholic in the White House could be seen as an alternative kind of leadership for Catholics in this country compared to U.S. bishops. And so this is something that will have to be studied, because we have never seen anything like this before.
Well, Massimo Fagioli, professor of historical theology at Villanova University and author of Joe Biden and Catholicism in the United States, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst, thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to end today with two moments from President Biden's inauguration. In his address, Biden spoke passionately and at length about democracy, unity, and truth. He closed his speech asking Americans to remember that future generations will judge the nation now by how it resolves, quote, the cascading crises of our era.
My fellow Americans, I close the day where I began, with a sacred oath. Before God and all of you, I give you my word. I will always level with you. I will defend the Constitution. I'll defend our democracy. I'll defend America. And I'll give all of you, keep everything I do in your service, thinking not of power, but of possibilities, not of personal interest, but the public good. And together we shall write an American story of hope, not fear, of unity, not division, of light, not darkness, a story of decency and dignity, love and healing, greatness and goodness. May this be the story that guides us, the story that inspires us, and the story that tells ages yet to come that we answered the call of history. We met the moment. Democracy and hope, truth and justice did not die in our watch, but thrived. That America secured liberty at home and stood once again as a beacon to the world. That is what we owe our forebears, one another, and generation to follow. So, with purpose and resolve, we turn to those tasks of our time, sustained by faith, driven by conviction, and devoted to one another and the country we love with all our hearts. May God bless America. And may God protect our troops. Thank you, America.
President Joe Biden closing his inaugural address. Soon after, an embodiment of the nation's future rose to the podium in the form of Amanda Gorman.
So, while once we asked, how could we possibly prevail over catastrophe? Now we assert. How could catastrophe possibly prevail over us?
At 22 years old, Gorman is former Youth Poet Laureate and now the youngest ever inaugural poet in American history.
If we merge mercy with might and might with right, then love becomes our legacy and change our children's birthright. So let us leave behind a country better than the one we were left. With every breath from my bronze-pounded chest, we will raise this wounded world into a wondrous one. We will rise from the gold-limbed hills of the West. We will rise from the wind-swept Northeast where our forefathers first realized revolution. We will rise from the lake-rimmed cities of the Midwestern states. We will rise from the sun-baked South. We will rebuild, reconcile, and recover in every known nook of our nation, in every corner called our country. Our people, diverse and beautiful, will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
Inaugural poet Amanda Gorman. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can profit motive save the planet? Is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation, and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.